I don't understand. I made a reservation. Do you have my reservation?
Yes, we do. Unfortunately, we ran out of cars.
But the reservation keeps the car here. That's why you have the reservation.
I know why we have reservations.
I don't think you do. If you did, I'd have a car. See, you know how to take the reservation. You just don't know how to hold the reservation. And that's really the most important part of the reservation, the holding. Anybody can just take it.
Ah, yes. If you are a TV nut like I am, you know that bit by heart. In fact, I was actually acting that out as it was playing, because if you remember that scene from Seinfeld, when he's at a car rental place, he says, anybody can just take them, and he's like grabbing out into the air. And I'm playing that because my first guest today on the show is Jennifer Cation Armstrong, and she has written what I think is going to be turning out to be perhaps the Seinfeld Bible. It's called Seinfeldia, and it's how a show about nothing changed everything. Jennifer, are you there?
I am.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, first off, I should say that Jennifer, while she is a highfalutin author, is from Homer Glen, Illinois.
Sure am.
Yeah. How long were you here before you went and sold out to the big city?
Well, I was there all the way through. I mean, I went to college at Northwestern.
Oh, my goodness.
Medill wow. School of Journalism.
Well, look at you.
I know. So I left after that.
Oh, very nice.
I actually did come back for a little while. I had gone to Southern California for a little bit and then came back for a little over a year and lived in Oak Park
and
then went to New York.
Good for you.
So, yeah, I've been all over the place there.
Well, welcome home back on good old WGN here in Chicago.
Thank you. I was really enjoying listening to the traffic report. It was giving me nostalgia.
Oh, yeah, all those streets. You remember all those streets now, right?
Yeah.
It's funny where nostalgia comes from. On street names, you can even get nostalgia.
Absolutely, especially the expressways. There's something about the traffic report in Chicago to me that's just, you know, childhood.
Well, our highways have names. Most highways just have numbers, but ours have names for some reason.
That's exactly what it is hearing, you know, when I was a kid and hearing like the Kennedy, and I didn't even know what that was. It was just like, I just went with it. But I can remember hearing it in my dad's car over and over again. So,
well, I'll tell you, I was reading the latest issue of Entertainment Weekly, and mm-hmm. I saw an excerpt from your forthcoming book, which actually comes out this week on the 5th, right?
Yes, on Tuesday.
So great. So people run out here. It's a new book right off the presses. It's called Seinfeldia. Very cool cover with showing kind of the diner with the name on it. But I just read, maybe two or three page excerpt from Entertainment Weekly, and I was riveted. And so I said, how do I get Jennifer on the phone to talk to her about this book? I'm a Seinfeld fan literally from day one. I always liked Jerry Seinfeld to begin with. And so I watched the show, and I have to admit, I like you, I mean, what's so great about this book, and I only got it a couple days ago, and I'm practically finished. I just have to read all your footnotes now.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm glad you put the footnotes in. I always enjoy a good footnote.
Thank you.
Yes. I know. I know the effort it takes to write the footnote. That's worse than writing the book.
Yes, it's always like, oh, my God, I'm done. Wait.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's wonderful that you're going to read.
You're waxing poetic about the show, and then you have all this other homework at the back.
Exactly.
But what's great about this is that not only do you give an insight and a background as to how Jerry and Larry David came together, put together the idea for the book or for the show, you also talk to many of the writers and many of the other behind-the-scenes people. And it really is cool because if you are a fan of the show, it's funny because there's some moments here that you recreate and a fan will immediately flash on those. And then to hear how all those little things came together. You mentioned Kathy Griffin, and she was on a couple of times. And you mentioned some of these episodes with all these different storylines and how many times, one writer would get credit because they came up with just one of the storylines, not the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was and then you said, as you say, not only did Larry David draw from his own life, but many of the writers did, too.
Yeah, and actually one of the things I was really interested in is, first of all, they had a lot of turnover in the writing staff. Every year there was mostly, you know, some, like, most of the writing staff left and a new group would come in. And the way I see that is that it was a lot about, they were just bringing people in to kind of mind their lives. You know, it was like, all right, bring in a new crop of lives.
Right.
News. And then they were spent by the end. Honestly, like, not that many interesting, funny things happened to most of us.
Exactly.
And then the other problem is, if you're writing for the show, nothing's happening to you because you're stuck. Like, they worked so hard. So they would kind of be spent by the end of the year. And at least the ones I talked to were pretty much like, yeah, you know, first of all, it gave me tons of opportunity after that. And also, I really did feel kind of spent. So in a lot of ways, they seemed pretty well adjusted about leaving. Of course, I'm sure there's plenty of others out there who didn't want to talk to me for the very reason that they were still, you know, mad about that or something.
Right.
But it's really interesting.
I think one of the reasons, to your point, is why the show still resonates. I mean, it's almost 20 years since its final episode.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. From our generation, and I'm not sure exactly how old you are, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but my point is, I grew up watching reruns of Andy Griffith and Dick Van Dyke. I never saw those shows in first run and things like that. And those shows always seemed old because, first of all, they were in black and white. But here's Seinfeld that, you know, it's still on all the time, and it's hard to believe that it's been 20 years, not since it first aired. It's been off the air for 20 years, almost, 1998.
Yeah, to me, that was one of the most interesting things about the show, is its staying power. I mean, in my opinion, I feel like it almost feels like it's still on the air, just in the sense that it's omnipresent. People still quote it. They still run ads on it, at least in the subways here in New York City and stuff. Like, TBS and the channels that run the reruns still run ads,
right?
You know, all the time, which, you know, they don't do for most reruns. And, you know, it's like, and they're still there, preserved forever. Like, they haven't aged. The actors are right there. And, you know, also even the actors, I would say, they're still in culture. They're still relevant. Larry David's running around doing,
everything.
Saturday Night Live because of Bernie Sanders.
And Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Louis-Dreyfus is having an incredible career still because she's a genius. And, you know, it just all feels like it's still, and when they did the Super Bowl commercial a few years ago, people went crazy. And, you know, it's like you said, it isn't the same, just like, oh, we're going to watch Andy Griffith for some nostalgia. It feels like it's still really relevant, aside from, of course, the hairstyle.
And I think one of the reasons that the show still feels very much in the present is that, as you explained, that the writers were mining their own lives. And so instead of writers sitting in a room trying to come up with some farcical thing, how Jack Tripper and Mr. Furley are going to paint the house and then some goofy thing is going to happen, you know, it's some farcical kind of, you know, just crazy thing to just, you know, if Lenny and Squiggy are going to open up a restaurant. But instead, these are, and how many times, I mean, as even though a lot of these situations and many times are certainly exaggerated some extent, but we've all in some way can relate to some of these things. We do stupid things. We say stupid things. We get in goofy situations, and they may not always be exact, but they're close enough where you go, wow, that was just like when I blank, blank, blank. And so that's what I think makes the show so relevant today, is because it really is real life.
Yeah, I do think that's exactly what it is. And one of my favorite things is that the writers told me that Larry David told them, take things that happen to you in real life and then have the characters do the thing you wish you had done.
Oh, cool. Very good. Right.
Right. So, like, that's why we love it, is we relate to it, but then they do the thing that we're like, oh, I wish I had the guts to do. You know, of course we're not going to do what George would do because he's an idiot.
Right.
But, you know, we don't have to take the consequences, but we can watch him act out kind of our fantasy of what we would do. Even that bit you played at the beginning, it's one of my favorites, by the way, the rental car one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was just doing that one the other day, literally like 2 days ago. And, you know, that's the thing, is like, then you get in that situation and you quote that as like this release of like, oh, why don't you take the reservation, but why don't you hold the reservation?
Well, think about even in everyday life. How many times do you say, Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yes, exactly.
Even when you're not talking about someone being gay.
Yep.
You just take it out of that context. Or, you know, oh, what are you going to be, a re-gifter?
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
some of these little catchphrases have now become not only part of the pop culture, but part of just a regular jargon.
Exactly. That's what's so, it's really one of my favorite things that I found out while I was researching this book, too. It's not really in there because I didn't get into this too much, but I visited some classes that study Seinfeld, and there's a class actually at DePaul that studies Seinfeld sometimes, and so a lot of the kids said, you know, they're young, they're 20 years old or something, and a lot of them said were surprised when they started learning about Seinfeld. They were like, oh, we didn't realize like that's where this phrase comes from. Like, we
right.
heard yada yada, we just didn't know
exactly.
that it started with that.
Right.
You know? And that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Jennifer Cation Armstrong. She is the author of a new book coming out this week called Seinfeldia. And as I said at the top of this, just a really good collection of anecdotes as well as some nice history. There's a lot of lore that goes along with Seinfeld as to how things started. And what's nice about this book is that you actually put some of the folklore to rest and you get down to some mm-hmm. of the facts. And what's also interesting about the development of the show, as we just talked about it being so based on real life, is that many of the episodes dealt with Jerry and George writing a sitcom.
Yes.
And that's almost exactly the way that Larry David and Jerry. So, I mean, a lot of it is on the screen as well. But what's nice to see is that you back it up with the way things really happened as opposed to how they showed it for comic entertainment effect on the TV show.
Exactly. That's one of my favorite arcs
yeah.
on the show.
Well, hold on. We'll be right back with Jennifer Cation Armstrong. This is Elton Jim. I'm filling in for Brian Noonan today. I'll be here till 9 o'clock. Phone number is 312-981-7200. If you've got any kind of Seinfeld questions or just want to share one of your favorite Seinfeld episodes, I still watch the show. In fact, on Saturday mornings at like 5 a.m. and Sunday mornings at 5 a.m. it's on TBS. Guess what I was doing this morning? I was watching Seinfeld at 5 a.m. So I still watch it. My wife rolls her eyes. I can watch those same episodes over and over and I'm still laughing. So hold on a second. We'll be right back with Jennifer here at WGN, Elton Jim, right after this.
Boy, these pretzels are making me thirsty.
Is that how you're going to say it?
No, I'm working on it.
Do it like this. These pretzels are making me thirsty.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
No,
see, that's no good. See, you don't know how to act.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Great episode. That's the one where George is parking cars in the neighborhood. And he's got a whole belt of keys. And then there's an old guy in the neighborhood who usually parks the cars, but he goes on vacation. And he comes back and George ruins a Woody Allen filming on the block as well as gets all these cars. And I love the guy who comes back the next day with all the, he gets fired. He goes, why can't you park cars? It's like putting on your pants. I want to know who's putting on your pants. I love that. I'm talking to Jennifer Cation Armstrong. She is the author of a new book called Seinfeldia, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. And I must say that I was doing some research on you. And since you are, my mom was never on the South Side, but I think we may be siblings. You may be the sister I never had.
I love it.
I don't know. Because
I mean, we're in the same town.
Yeah, because my mom may have ventured to the South Side. I don't know.
Who knows?
She was a wild gal. But you and I really share a lot of the same interests. You did a book about the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
I did. That was before this one.
Yeah, and I love the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I want to hopefully get into that a little bit. But I do want to talk about this book. So tell me why you decided that the world needed a book called Seinfeldia.
Well, I write about television for a living, you know, which is not a bad gig. And I, you know, covered mainly television when I was on staff at Entertainment Weekly for about 10 years. And particularly, I'm really interested in television history. And, you know, I just think if you're going to do a book about a TV show, I don't think you can do much better than Seinfeld. You'd be surprised once you start. If this is your job and you're really sitting there thinking about, like, what TV show can I write a book about, there's not a lot of them that stand up to book treatment. You know, it's
how,
like,
long did it take to write? How long did it take from the idea to finish?
I would say about 2 years.
Wow, okay.
Something like that. Wow. Yeah. I always want it to be a year, but it always stretches a little longer than that.
Right.
You know, research, it's hard to, like, stop researching and start the writing process, because it's fun. It's fun to research, and, you know, it's a lot of interviews, and you could go for a long time, and there's a point at which you have to say, like, okay, we're going to stop, and we're going to write this thing and, you know, move on with our lives. But, yeah, I just think Seinfeld's probably one of the most, if not the most influential shows of our modern times. I think most of what we see on TV now, you can sort of, there's something about it. You can sort of trace the DNA back to Seinfeld. It had a huge cultural impact at the time. It kind of ushered in the modern era of television in terms of, like, the way that people watch now, the really obsessive way that people watch, and also, like, the hype for the finales and the media coverage. That didn't used to be the way TV was, and it sort of, I think, was the forerunner for what we're now all calling the golden age of television. It really kind of helped to usher that in. So there's a lot to say.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting, too, even though I did watch the show early on, because I did like Jerry Seinfeld, my gosh, when you watch those early episodes, as you note in the book, and I'm glad you did this, you didn't pull any punches. The show, I would say, the first several episodes are really hard to watch.
They're pretty weird, right?
Yeah, there's no chemistry, there's no pacing. As you've pointed out, and I always said from the first minute, George Costanza is basically Woody Allen.
Yeah.
You know, and Kramer is not Kramer yet. Elaine is not, you know, you could see that there was a turning point. I do remember saying to myself, when it first aired, I saw it when it first aired, and I said to myself, from now on, I could never stop watching this show. And that was when I saw the contest. That was so well written, where they never said the word masturbation on network television, and the way they showed it, and they show how everybody was dropping out by whoever was sleeping at night.
I know, I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so clever, it was so well written, it's so smart, and yet so silly. And that's what's so great about that show is, you know, it's well written, it's very intelligent, but there's also slapstick. It's a silly show.
Yeah, they're cartoon characters.
Yeah.
That's part of the appeal. They remain the same. That's something that's really fascinating to me is, This took the opposite approach from all sitcoms before it, right? With the no hugging, no learning rule that Larry David had, that meant no character development. This was not about these people. They did get comeuppance on occasion, and you know, finale is another story.
Right?
But, like, you know, aside from that, it's not like this thing where we all grew, you know, on Friends. Oh, we all grew up and we all learned and we all came into ourselves and now we go off to the world.
That's not how real life is.
Right. They stayed exactly the same. And I think that's another reason it endures is that we can imagine dropping George Costanza into a scenario right now and understand what he would do. And that is appealing to us, that enduring character. It's all about character. But you're right. They didn't have those. You know, it took them a while to develop those characters. And they were lucky that they had the chance to, and that they had the chance to do it. Even though, and I think it's best that they were doing it when they weren't doing well in the ratings, because not as many people were watching. So they could kind of flail around for a little while.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really found their groove, like, right around the time they started to pick up, which is great. You don't see that a lot in TV now.
But, so, I mean, when you think about some of the class, and not only were there some great episodes, but as I said, there were so many inside jokes, and they did takeoffs on JFK, the movie, and they did takeoffs, obviously, on OJ with Jackie Chiles and that whole thing and the thing. And then, you know, the Festivus. I mean, there was just, you know, Crazy Joe DeVoe. I mean, there's all these, you know, with the opera and Pagliacci. I mean, they were so smart. They were so cleverly written that you say that this show you know, when you're watching it, you can be impressed as well as laugh, which I always like.
And you feel smart.
Exactly. And you learn something. I learned more from Twilight Zone. Rod Serling used to drop more references into stuff that I'd look up and say, oh, okay, that's interesting. The guy was very well read, and he dropped things into his episodes. We don't have too much time left. Let me just say one thing about Mary Tyler Moore to you. So here's my theory on Mary Tyler Moore. And I should say that Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong has written a great book. It's called Seinfeldia. So it comes out this week. Look for it in your bookstore. She wrote a book about Mary Tyler Moore. My view on Mary Tyler Moore's show is that when they decided that it wasn't about Mary and her love life, and that it was the newsroom with Ted and Lou and Murray and Sue Ann, that's when the show became the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, it definitely is the, I mean, I hate saying the first because, like, probably someone will dig something up that was before it or whatever. But, like, it's definitely the classic first workplace comedy. You know, we see it all the time now. That was weird then. It was everything was family, you know, nuclear family type stuff. And this really brought the sitcom into the workplace, and it was important that it was about a woman, and it allowed, you know, you could kind of even map out the family structure from the main characters. It's like Mary's sort of a mother figure and Lou's sort of a father figure. You know, it's like they really just, and that is, all those characters are incredible, talking about, you know, that having great characters is the key to a good sitcom, and that's one more example of that.
Well, let me tell you, I had a great conversation. I could talk to you for hours, Jennifer. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, her new book is called Seinfeldia. If you're a fan of Seinfeld, if you're a fan of history of television, it's a must read. I flew through this thing. It's written in a nice, breezy way, informative, fun, and funny, just like the show. Good luck with it. Great talking to you. And it's nice to see a local gal do good.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Jennifer.